Okay, we continue our study of Pirkei Avos, and we are up to none other than Mishnah Gimel, and it happens to be a very appropriate topic to discuss this evening. There is an age-old practice on Nittelnacht that we find that there are some in the world who choose not to learn on the evening of December 25th. My father always told us growing up that you can be makel. It's not such a problem to be makel. You're allowed to learn on this evening if your really heart desires to do so. But I think it would be an interesting time to actually talk about what the beginnings of Christianity were all about, and it relates directly to our Mishnah, as strange as that sounds, as you will see from the duration of the shiur. The concept that the Mishnah is going to discuss, which we're going to have to talk about at great length and in great detail next week, is the idea and the principle of faith, which is about free will, about Bechira Chafshis, and the idea of Schar Va'onesh, that we all have the opportunity to make choices in life. And whenever we make choices, we will either be punished or we will be rewarded for the choices that we make. This is considered to be an extremely fundamental tenet of everything that Jewish faith is all about. So much so that we have a Gemara Maseches Pesachim, Daf Nun Dalet Amud Aleph, if you look here on the sheet. Shiva Dvarim Nivru Kodem Shenivra Adam. There are seven things that were created in the world before Adam HaRishon was even considered. And one of those is Gan Eden V'Gehenem, because before a human being comes into existence, we have to already have the Schar Va'onesh set up. You have to have that built into the system before the human being even involves himself in human experiences on this earth. Schar Va'onesh and the idea of Bechira Chavshis is so critical to the life of a human being, and that's why the Gemara says that this was created before Adam HaRishon even came to be. So let us see our Mishnah. With that in mind, let us see our Mishnah here, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Gimel, where we're told the following. This is number Beis on the sheet. Antignos Ish Socho Kibel Mishimon HaTzadik. For those who remember, we were talking about Shimon HaTzadik, who is the end of the period of the Knesset HaGedolah, the Anshe Knesset HaGedolah. So now here we have a direct continuum of one Rebbe tells his Talmud, who gives it over to his Talmidim. So Antignos is the next link in that chain. He got from his teacher, Shimon HaTzadik, the following. Hu Haya Omer. Al Tiyu Ka'avadim HaMashamshin Esarav Almanas L'Kabal Pras. We should not act in life like those who are paid workers and who are expecting to be repaid for the work that they do. Ela Havu Ka'avadim. We should all be like servants. HaMashamshin Esarav Shelo Almanas L'Kabal Pras. Our perspective in life should always be not that we're serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu because we expect that He's going to give us a big portion in Olam Haba or in Gan Eden, or that we're going to be punished in Gehenna, but rather we should be people who serve God because it's the right thing to do. And regardless of whether or not there's going to be Schar Va'onesh, regardless of whether or not there's going to be Gan Eden, Gehenna, we should serve Him anyway. Now, this is very problematic, it's troubling, and it's a little bit confusing because so many times throughout the pages of Chumash we find that the Torah itself speaks about reward. The Torah itself says, number one, in Sefer Shemos, we have it in Parshas Yisro, Leman Ya'arichun Yamecha. We all know that pasuk by Kibud Av V'Em, we're told, if you do the mitzvah, you will be rewarded with a good life. It seems that it's not so antithetical to our religion to think about what the schar is going to be. Not only that, the Torah says in Sefer Devarim, Parshas Va'aschanan, Uleman Yitav Lach V'ha'arachta Yamim. The Torah says once again, V'haya Ekev Tishmu'un, if you're going to listen to the mitzvos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands you to do, V'shamar Hashem Elokecha Lecha Asabris V'asachesed, and then it says, Uveirach Pri Bitnecha V'friyat Masecha, God is going to bless us, and He's going to give us bounty in life. V'haya Im Shama Tishmu'al Mitzvosai, and then the Torah says, V'achalta V'savata, we're going to have many, many wonderful things if we do the mitzvah satorah. So this is a problematic Mishnah. What would be so bad if a person observes mitzvahs throughout life solely because HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised me that I'm going to have reward? After all, I look in the Psukim and Chumash and the Torah itself. God Himself said that if you do the mitzvahs, things are going to be good, and if perhaps you do not, things will not be as positive as you expected them to be. So what exactly does our Mishnah mean is something we'll have to worry about next week, but I think just putting the question out is a very fundamental question to all of our emunah, to everything we believe in. Number two, the Rambam writes in Sefer Hamada, when he talks about Hilchos Tshuva, and there in Hilchos Tshuva, the Rambam speaks a lot about Bechira Chafshis, and he says, because we all have the ability to choose whether or not we want to do positive in life or negative, therefore the Rambam says we all have the right to say that we can also do tshuva. If we've made a wrong decision, it means we have the ability to make the right decision now. So there in Hilchos Tshuva, the Rambam gets into a whole discussion about the idea of Bechira Chafshis and what it means to us. And there the Rambam says, you'll notice that nowhere in the Torah do we have a direct mention of Olam Haba or Tchias HaMesim. And nowhere in the Torah do we have a direct mention of Gan Eden or Gehenim. If these are such fundamental principles, says the Rambam, that we're going to have Schar Va'onesh and Bechira Chafshis, and these are such important ideas, so much so that we're told these were created before Adam HaRishon himself was created, should HaKadosh Baruch Hu not have gone out of his way to tell us somewhere in Chumash that, by the way, the Schar that I'm referring to is, there's a place called Gehenim, there's a place called Gan Eden, there's something called Tchias HaMesim. We should be introduced to all of these concepts, and yet, you look through all of Chumash and nowhere do we have a direct mention of any of this. So we'll have to get into some of these ideas next week, and in general, I'd like to really talk next week about Schar Va'onesh and what that means for all of us, and how important it is to really understand what that concept is all about. But for now, let's take a step back and try to understand the significance, and perhaps more importantly, the consequence of what we just learned in our Mishnah. Let's read it again. Antigonus told us the following. We should not live life with a perspective that if I do good, God is going to give me good life. And if I do bad, if I make the wrong choices, then life is not going to be good. That is not the proper way. It's not the right attitude. Rather, he says, we should be ka'avadim ha-mishamshim esarav shelo al-manas l'kabel pras. Now, you should understand, this Mishnah caused probably the greatest catastrophe in Jewish history as a result of this very basic statement. And surprisingly, this is the one and only statement in all of Shas, not that I know all of Shas, but those who do know Shas write in their Svarim, that this is the one and only statement that we have in all of Mishnayis and all of Shas from Antigonus Ish Socho. And it caused such horrible damage and destruction to the Jewish people when he was just saying something that should be a guiding point in all of our lives. So let's read what happened. Because of this Mishnah, let's see, there's an Avos Derab Nasan. If you look at number Gimel. Avos Derab Nasan is not exactly Pirkei Avos, but it's in some way considered to be a supplement to all of the teachings that we are taught in Pirkei Avos. Avos Derab Nasan was authored in the days of the Gaonim. One of the Talmidim of Rashi writes, he has no idea why it's called Avos Derab Nasan. Who is Reb Nasan that wrote this? He's not exactly sure, but this is a very, very old compendium of Ma'amari Chazal, and it's supposed to be in some way a supplement to Pirkei Avos itself, meaning Pirkei Avos is the short version, and if you want the longer story to the Mishnah, or sometimes the background, then you look in the Avos Derab Nasan. So let's look in the Avos Derab Nasan, and we'll see what the real story of this Mishnah was and how terrible it actually became as a result of this seemingly pariv, neutral statement of Antigonus Ish Socho. Says the Mishnah in Avos Derab Nasan, Antigonus Ish Socho hayu lo shnei talmidim shehayu shonim bidvarav. Antigonus had two star talmidim, two amazing students who were so meticulous. They were shonim bidvarav. They used to sit there in his classes every day in his shir, and they were so careful to make sure they understood everything that he said. Not only that, hayushonim l'talmidim, they were the most effective teachers of the generation as well. They used to go to the shir of the Gadol Hador of Antigonus Ish Socho, and then they would bring it down to the masses, and they would go to the communities and they would teach. Now, who are these talmidim? They not only taught, but they gave it v'talmidim l'talmidehem. I always think about my father. He's so humble. But my father sometimes says to me, I don't know why he thinks this way, but he sometimes says, you know, who knows, maybe the shul rabbi out in Texas somewhere, out of town, maybe he's done more for Klal Yisrael than I have. That's what he always says. And I say, Daddy, you're out of your mind. Do you not realize that almost every single shul rabbi in this country, in any modern Orthodox community, is your Talmud? So that means you have talmidim v'talmidei talmidim. In essence, every single one of those people that they are inspiring are considered to be like my father's grandchildren, like as if he inspired them himself. So that's what the Mishnah says here, just to give us a context. These talmidim of Antigonus Ish Socho were such effective teachers Not only did they teach, but they taught the teachers. And then those teachers went out and taught so many others. So they had such a tremendous following. Amdu v'diktiku achareyam v'yamru. So here, Antigonus comes into Shir one day, and he says, you know, I'd like to teach you something that came to me last night. And that is, I think the proper way to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu would be that we should not be thinking only about Schar v'onesh. We should not be thinking only about Gehenim and Gan Eden, but we should think about serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu just because we love Him. Avas Hashem, Yiras Hashem, that's all. Okay. Amdu v'diktiku achareyam. These two students, their names were Tzadok and Baisus. These two students were sitting there in the shir, and they said, you know, we're trying to really understand what Rebbe said today. V'amru. Ma ro avuseinu lamar davar zeh. Why would our teacher come into class today and tell us that we shouldn't look forward to the day that we're going to be repaid in Gehenim or Gan Eden? Efshur sheyase po malacha kol hayom v'lo yitol scharo arvis. Do you think it makes sense that I would ever work for somebody if I knew they had no money to pay me back for the work that I'm doing? So if I'm a plumber and I'm called to someone's house and I know that the guy is bankrupt and I know that he has borrowed money from everyone in the neighborhood, why would I ever go do a job unless I'm just the nicest person? But if I'm just a regular fix-it man who likes to get paid for the job that he does and for the work that he's involved in, why would I go to someone who I know is not going to pay me? So that's what they said. Why would we work hard in this world if we know that we're not going to be paid? Now, here's the misunderstanding. Correct? Antigonus didn't say you're not going to be repaid. He just said, your attitude and what drives you in life should not be solely for the purpose of being repaid in Gan Eden. That's what he said. Now, they made a mistake, and they said, must be that he doesn't believe that there is an afterworld. It must be that he doesn't believe that there is a Gan Eden. Now, by the way, these were the two preeminent students of his. These were the ones who all the time were going out and teaching everybody else what he said. And here they made a misunderstanding, a tremendous mistake in the way that they took in what it is that he had taught them. And they said the following, Ela, ilu hayyodim avaseinu sheyesh olam achar v'yesh tchias hameisim lo hayyomim kach. It must be that our teacher doesn't believe that there's a Gan Eden. Must be he doesn't believe in Tchias HaMesim. And as a result of that one shir, why you don't go back and ask the Rebbe what he meant? I cannot understand that. But because of that one thing, you know, the only way I can understand it is, sometimes you have such a great person, like Rav Soloveitchik, let's say. He was such a genius, but people were afraid of him. They had such yiras hakavod. They were so nervous to speak up in his presence that so often they misunderstood what he said because they didn't bother to ask him to clarify because they were just so afraid. And therefore you have so many people running around saying conflicting ideas from one person, and you ask yourself, were all these people in the same classroom? How could it be? How could it be they all heard the same thing? The answer is, some people may not have fully understood and they just didn't get around to asking the question. Well, that's exactly what happened here. Tzadok and Baisus amdu as a result of this, amdu upirshu min haTorah. Because of this, they gave up on everything. V'nifritu mehem shtei pirtzos. And as a result of this mistake and of their misunderstanding, two groups started to splinter away from the mainstream traditional Jewish idea of the way life always used to be lived. And these were, number one, the Tzedukim and the Baisusim. Tzedukim al shem Tzadok. One of these students was Tzadok, and therefore his followers were referred to as the Tzedukim. And Baisusim were Al-Shem Baisus. All of his followers refer to themselves as the Baisusim. We are following our great teacher who taught us so many other things in life, so what he's teaching us now must also be accurate. And the Mishnah says in Avos Rav Nasan, V'hayim ishtamshim b'klei zav u'v'klei kesef kol yameihem shelo haisa datam gasam aleihem. They had no sense of humility. They said, you know what, let's just party all day and all night. Forget it. This world is not a serious place. God is never going to repay us for anything. Just forget all that we've been taught until now. And they said, Ela tzedukim omrim misaris hu biyad haprushim sheim mitzarim atzman ba'olam hazeh. You abstain from eating non-kosher meat, and you abstain from all the people you're not allowed to marry, and from all the different halachas that the Torah says. You're not allowed to talk lashon hara, and you're not allowed to do so many different things. What are you doing it for? Forget it. If you're never going to be repaid for it, just give it all up. And in fact, the Rambam writes, that they gave everything up. Not just, meaning the way that we generally think of tzedukim and by susim are, they accepted Torah Shebichsav, and they rejected the Torah Shebal Peh. That's what most say. The Rambam writes in his commentary on the Pirush HaMishnayos, he says, no, they really intended to reject everything. They didn't believe in the Torah Shebichsav or the Torah Shebal Peh. But they said, that's not going to go. No one's going to accept us if we reject everything. So we have to scale it back a little bit. Let's tone it down. And therefore, the Rambam says, they said, all right, we just don't accept the Torah Shebal Peh, but Torah Shebichsav is okay. And all of that happened as a result of this one statement of their teacher, which is what we're going to learn later on in Pirkei Avos, where the Mishnah tells us, Chachamim Hizaru B'divreichem. Some say that that was mentioned as a direct response to this story. How careful you have to be if you're in a position of leadership, if you're a parent, and you have people who look up to you, and you have children who listen to the words that you say, and sometimes they take you very seriously and very literally, and they don't bother to come back and ask you what it is that you may have meant. If you're a teacher and you have students who are listening, not everybody listens, but there always could be someone in the room, and you never know what could happen as a result of what you say, and therefore the Mishnah says later on, Chachamim hizaru b'divrechem, because look what happens. As a result of Antigonus not choosing his words as carefully as perhaps he should have, the entire Jewish community split apart, and you'll see that split didn't just cause for everybody to be in two different communities, but it caused the downfall, the destruction of Klal Yisrael. Let's see. And that's really where the root of Christianity came from as well, as we'll see a little bit later in the shiur. Now, it's fascinating that every day we daven Shmona Esrei. And in Shmona Esrei, you'll notice, we do not have 18 brachas. In Shmona Esrei, we have 19 brachas. What is the extra bracha? V'la malshinim. V'la malshinim is all about Al tihi sikva, all of those enemies of the Jewish people. Writes the Sefer HaKuzari, who are we referring to? The la malshinim. Who are these people? Writes the Sefer HaKuzari, Hatzdukim v'habaisusim. These groups of the Tzedukim and the Baisusim, who were trying from within to destroy everything that traditional Judaism was about, Heim ha'minim she'anu mispalalim aleihem mitfilaseinu. They are the ones that V'la Malshinim was written for those people, for those Jews who grew up in the Jewish community and who chose to destroy from within. Those are the ones that we have intention for when we say V'la Malshinim every single day. I don't need to translate that into our generation, but that's what the Sefer HaKuzari writes. You can use your imagination. That's what we mean. There are people who try to destroy from within, and that is the intended objective of V'la Malshinim Al Tihi Sikva. We ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, do not accept everything that they're trying to attempt to destroy in our community. Don't allow it to happen. That is why V'la Malshinim was instituted, because of groups like these. The Gemara says in Maseches Brachos Daf Nun Dalid, a fascinating statement where we're told, Kochos Mei Brachos Shebemigdash Hayu Omrim Ad Ha'olam. Every time they said a brach on the Beis HaMigdash, they would say, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Ha'olam. However, once the Tzedukim started making trouble, and they said there is no afterlife, there is no Tchias HaMesim, there is no Gan Eden, there is no Gehenim, there's no Schavra Onesh, they said, we have to do something to reinforce our traditional position that of course there's an afterlife, that we believe in Gan Eden, that we believe in Tchias HaMesim, and therefore they said, Mishekilkelu Hatzdukim Amru Ein Ha'olam Ela Echad, when the Tzedukim said, no, there's just this world and nothing after it, Hiskinu Shayu Omrim Min Ha'olam V'yad Ha'olam. Every bracha that was said in the Beis HaMikdash, they added a statement, and that was, Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Ha'olam Min Ha'olam V'yad Ha'olam. You are the one who is blessed in this world, and we believe that there's a world to come. But it makes sense. This was instituted because this was one of the first things that the Tzedukim chose to reject. No afterlife, no Gan Eden, came directly from this statement. The Gemara says, in Maseches Sanhedrin Daf Lamed Ches, number Hey, Tanu Rabbanan Adam Nivra Be'erev Shabbos. Why was Adam HaRishon created on Erev Shabbos? Would it not have made sense that Adam HaRishon should have been the first creation in the world? Isn't he the most important part of humanity, of all of the cosmos? And the answer, says the Gemara, Mipnei Ma, because there would come a time when there would be Tzedukim. And therefore, Shelo Yiyu at Tzedukim Omrim, Shutif Hayelo La Kodesh Baruch Hu B'maisa Bereshis. If Adam HaRishon would have been created on day one, that would have left room for these people to say, well, maybe Adam HaRishon helped out a little bit, and God was not the one who did everything on his own. And that was the reason, says the Gemara, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided to create Adam HaRishon on Yom HaShishi. Amazing phenomenon. The Tzedukim not only attempted to destroy the Jewish community, but part of their attempt was that they took leadership positions in the Beis HaMikdash. They made themselves the Kohanim Gedolim. Now, Kohen Gadol used to be a position that you were voted into. But as we said, they had so many followers. And you had a Beis HaMikdash at the time, and they said, we're in the leadership position now. We have a right to have a vote. We have a right to put our own candidate in. And listen to what the Gemara says in Maseches Yuma. I didn't put it on here, but the Gemara says something amazing. How long did the second Beis HaMikdash last? 420 years. Close. First Beis HaMikdash was 410. Second Beis HaMikdash was 420. Right? Says the Gemara. We're told, Amad Arba Meos Ve'eser Shanim Velo Shimshibo Elo Shmona Eser Kohanim Gedolim. The first Beis HaMikdash was only 410 years. And in the 410 years, they only had 18 Kohanim Gedolim. How can that be? If each one lasted, do the math. How many years? I don't know. Each one lasted a certain period of time. I'm sorry I didn't do the math in advance. But 18 divided, if you do 410 divided by 18, what's the answer? Anybody know? Okay, on average they lasted 30, 40 years, I assume, something like that. So the Gemara says, am I correct?
22.7.
Thank you. So on average they lasted 22 years, 0.7, and 7 months. So they lasted 22 and a half years. And then they went to vote in the next one. That was the first Beis HaMikdash. Makes sense. A Kohen Gadol, till he's worthy of serving in that position, probably needs a lot of background checking, needs a lot of working on himself. And then by the time he gets too old, it's too hard for him, so he retires and they get someone new. However, the Gemara says, in the Bayis Sheni, Shimshubo, how many Kohanim Gedolim do you think served in the 420 years of Bayis Sheni? Take a guess. First one at 18. 50. Wrong. Way off. Cold. What?
Kept
eye on Yom Kippur. How many would you say?
Over 100.
Says the Gemara, 300. At least 300 Kohanim Gedolim went through the cycle in the Bayis Sheni. Now, it's not even that once a year. Listen, says the Gemara. Say Mehem, 40 years, Shimon HaTzadik was the Kohen Gadol. So knock out 40 years. How many are we left with? 370. I'm sorry, 380. Knock out 80 years, Yochanan Kohen Gadol served as the Kohen Gadol for 80 years. So what are we up to? 300. Eser Yishmael ben Pabi, 10 years, so we're up to 290 years, because 10 years were by another. Ve'amile Achas Esrei, some say 11 years. Let's leave the 11 years on. You have 290 years, and yet, Mikan ve'elech tzei v'chashov kal echad ve'echad lohotzi shnasu. Can you imagine? The Tzedukim are putting up their own candidates, who are certainly unworthy of the position, and every single year, at least one Kohen Gadol dies. Either on Yom Kippur when he goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he just doesn't come out alive, or at some other point in the year, and they don't get the message. Every single year. So basically, it was beautiful. We have a Beis HaMikdash, and everyone thinks, oh, glorious period of Jewish history, Beis HaMikdash. It was awful. We were living at a time of Beis HaMikdash when we had such horrible destruction. Our own Beis HaMikdash was being run by Tzedukim, by our own enemies. By our own enemies who didn't believe in Torah Shebaal Peh, who didn't believe in any of the values that we stand for as traditional Jews.
Yeah, actually, I didn't understand, like Shimon HaTzadik,
yeah.
His two children, he was a tzadik.
Right.
And his own two children were from his
Yavnim. So Rabbi's son syndrome, what can I say? You know, I also went off. Rabbi's son syndrome. You know, this is not a, it's not a simple thing. The Gemara says Moshe Rabbeinu's grandchildren were Ovdei Avodah Zarah. How do you explain that? Look, the answer to all this is everybody has Bechira Chafshis. Doesn't matter who your father is. Everybody has a choice in life to decide how they want to live life. You got to make choices. What can I say? So, how far did the Tzedukim actually go? We mentioned before that the Rambam writes, they really denied everything. They had no interest in Torah Shebichsav, no interest in Torah Shebaal Peh, They denied the existence of anything to do with the afterworld. They didn't believe in Gan Eden, no Gehenim, no Tchias HaMesim, nothing, the Gemara says. And not only that, they were Kafru Bebias HaMashiach, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, they said, the same way there's no Tchias HaMesim, there's no Mashiach. Just enjoy life, this is it. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we will die, and that's it. Nothing more to worry about. The Gemara even goes so far in Meseches Erev and Daf Samaches, the exact halacha that it's related to doesn't have anything to do with our shir, and it's too complicated, so it's not for now. But the Gemara there has a discussion amongst the Tanaim, should we say that Tzeduki Harei Dino Kenachri? Should we assume that these Tzedukim have a status of a non-Jew with regard to the laws of Erevin, not relevant to our shir? But that's how far this went. That's what they were living. And yet these people, who perhaps Dinam Kenachri, you weren't allowed to eat in their homes, they weren't keeping kosher, nothing. And yet these people were running the Beis HaMikdash. They were the Kohanim Gedolim. Unbelievable to think about it when you understand the context. You put all the Gemaras together, you see what was happening. So the Gemara records that the first actual disagreement between the group of the Tzedukim and the group what we refer to as the Prushim, which is so ironic. The Prushim means the traditional Jews. Why were they called the Prushim? Prushim means that you broke away. You know how that happened? My father told me once. The Tzedukim gave a nasty name to everybody else. And after he told me this, I thought about it. Why are they called the Prushim? We didn't veer off of the path. We stay the same. Correct? Why is it that they were referred to as the ones who veered away when they were the ones who actually stayed? And it's because the Tzedukim gave them that title. Look, the masses of the Jewish people are following us. You're the ones who are breaking away. Even though we were the ones who were keeping to the faith, who were keeping to the old tradition that we had always been familiar with. So the Gemara says that the first disagreement, the first dispute that they had with regard to how to have a functioning Beis HaMikdash was with regard to the Karban HaTamid. So the Gemara says we have an obligation every day to offer a Karban Tamid Shel Shachar and a Karban Tamid Shel Bein HaArbayim. We have to bring a Karban in the morning and in the evening. And the Gemara tells us, based on the Psukim, that this has to come Mitrumas HaLishka. This has to come from a communal fund. We all give Machzis HaShekel. And from that, they used to take money every year because the Karban Tamid had to be brought on behalf of the entire Jewish people. The Tzedukim said, hey, no, no, no. Look back in the Pasuk and it says, Es HaKeves HaEchad Ta'aseh Baboker. Anyone who knows Hebrew, Ta'aseh means you should do. Sounds like an individual is allowed to do it. Why does the Torah say Ta'aseh? So the Tzedukim said, no, no, no. The Karban Tamid does not come from the communal funds. Karban Tamid comes from anybody who steps up today and says, hey, I'm in the mood to sponsor the Karban Tamid, I want to bring it, and I'm traveling from who knows where, I made the trip all the way up to the Beis HaMikdash, Karban Tamid is mine today. Well, what happens if tomorrow nobody shows up? I don't know. So the Tzedukim assumed there's always going to be someone who's in the mood that day. So therefore they said, based on the fact that the Pasuk says, Es HaKeves HaChad Ta'aseh, B'Lashon Yachid, singular, that means even a Yachid Misnadev, even one person is allowed to bring the Karban Tamid on behalf of everyone, that's good enough. And it's Prushim said, what do you mean? Look at the rest of the Pasuk. What does it say? Tishmeru, Lahakrev Libamado, everything else in that whole paragraph is said B'Lashon Rabin, which means that we have to bring it collectively as a Jewish people. So it just so happens to be that this was the first dispute, this was the first disagreement with regard to how the Beis HaMikdash should be functioning every single day of the year. Do we have a right to say that every individual should say, I want the Karban Tamid today, it's mine? Or do we say, no, it has to come from the Chumas HaLishka, it has to come from the communal fund? It sounds like a very petty dispute. It sounds like, well, why was this the big thing that they picked on? So I found something this week. I'm so happy that I found it. I don't know why I looked in Reb Shamshon Raphael Hirsch on this pasuk of Karban Tamid. It was a mazel. I was looking for something else that somebody told me in his name. And here I found an amazing pshat from Reb Shamshon Raphael Hirsch to explain why is it that they picked on this petty little issue, Karban Tamid, who's going to pay for it? And why does the Gemara see this as the issue that really defined everything else about the dispute between the Tzedukim and the Prushim? Let's read together what he says, because I think it's an amazingly brilliant suggestion. And he writes that this was a majorly pivotal moment in the history of the Tzedukim and the Prushim, and this really defined what the fight was all about. How so? Let's read it. Al pi advarim ha'elam uvenas hisnagdis ha'tzedukim. This will explain why it is that the tzedukim were against hakrabas karban atamid mikaspei ha'uma. Why were the tzedukim against offering the karban tamid every day from the communal fund that we had collected from the entire Jewish community? Shaharei zeharayon ha'olam mikarban atamid shel ha'uma. If you believe that the karban tamid has to be paid for by the entire community, what emerges from that is kol yachid ba'am harotza lil matorah lekadosh es ma'isav. Chayiv lifnos l'netzigus haklal shebemigdash. It means that we have to submit ourselves to a greater entity. That's what it means. When I put myself in the Trumas Halishka, when I put myself together with the entire Jewish community, that means I'm not an individual anymore. That means I don't have a right to make decisions on how the Jewish religion should be practiced or perhaps should not. It means I don't have a right to decide how we're going to observe mitzvos and where the averis perhaps apply or do not. Because I have to be humble and submit myself to the fact that I'm part of a greater whole. I'm part of something much larger than myself. And therefore he says that the safekeepers and the guardians of the tradition were the fact that we have a Klal Yisrael. And Klal Yisrael is run by its leaders. Now you have a group of Jews who say, no, we're not going to be submitting ourselves to that. They're not going to tell us how to live our lives. We have a right to decide how we are going to observe the religion based on our terms, based on our definitions. And writes Rav Hirsch, look in the next paragraph. Ulam, rayon zehu stira gemura l'toras hatzedukim shel kol hatkufa. This was as contrary as you can possibly be to everything that the tzedukim were about. Toras hatzedukim more. You know what the tzedukim stood for? Sha'adam ha'yehudi miskasher le'elokav rak ayidei ha'os haksuva shel ha'mikra. The tzedukim said, we only believe in Torah Shebechsav, which means, open up a chumash, read it, and you'll understand exactly what it says. And that means, the Gemara says, krucho menaloches bekeren zavis, the Torah is out there for everyone in the world, everyone can see it, everyone can learn it. Kalarotza lilmod, yavo v'yilmod, we don't need any of the traditions of how to interpret a pasuk, of what exactly it means when the pasuk doesn't seem to be saying what you thought. Ki adam yifarish as hakasev ka'avas nafsho ha-subjectivis. You have a right to subjectively decide, in whatever generation you live, how you're going to interpret a pasuk. Like many today who say, when the Torah says that Mishkav Zachar is a toeva, Torah didn't really mean it's a toeva, because how could it be in our generation? Did the Torah really understand what people would be going through? Can't be. So we have to subjectively decide, based on our ethical norms of today, what the Torah actually meant. It's much easier to live life like that, when I'm not bound by any of the traditional interpretations of Torah Shebaal Peh. Hu yekabel mimenu samatim l'rucho. I will accept whatever in Chumash makes sense to me, and whatever does not, I will have the right to reinterpret in my own way. And this way, I'll have no contradictions between the ethical norms of society of that generation and what the Torah Shebichsav actually says. Yirabo es ratzon Hashem, v'yikayim oso ka'avanoso. Torah ha'tzedukim, go to the next side of the page. Mita'eves es ruach karban ha'tamid. What do we do every day when we offer the karban tamid in the Beis HaMikdash? We once again reaffirm our staunch commitment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we say, we will offer the karban tamid in the morning, we'll do it once again in the afternoon, we'll do exactly what you tell us to do, we will follow all the rules, and when we take it from the Trumas HaLishka, we're saying, we not only follow the rules, but we see ourselves as something much greater than just the individual. We bring it on behalf of the entire Klal Yisrael. The Tzedukim said, no, that's not the way life is going to work from here on in. We have a right to each go and to decide what it is that the Torah means, to interpret in our own way. And therefore, he says, this is why this was not just coincidental, that they picked on the Karban Tamid to be the one and only first place that they're going to start to alter the way things are done in the Beis HaMikdash. No. This was with specific intent to teach the community. We are never expected to be something greater than just the individual. Every person has a right to decide on his own. There is no afterlife. There is no Tchias HaMesim. There is no Gan Eden. There is no Mashiach. Just enjoy life now. Like the Avos Rav Nosson said, after they came to this decision, they sat and just partied. They used Klei Kesev and Klei Zav. Why should we be humble? Why should we ever have a seriousness in life when life is here for us to enjoy? And why is it that the traditional Orthodox community is being so oppressive to themselves not to speak Lashon Hara, you abstaining from this, abstaining from that, just enjoy yourself. You're not going to have another chance, no other opportunity, and God's never going to pay you back anyway. After all, is that not what the Mishnah said? Because God's never going to pay you back. There is no Gan Eden, there is no Gehenim. That's where this started. And writes Rav Hirsch, that's why the very first place where they decided to make change in the Beis HaMikdash when they came to power was on the Karban Tamid. That's something that came from a communal fund. We cannot accept that. There is no communal anything anymore. There's no standard. There's no being a part of that. We have a right to decide whatever it is that we want. With all of this happening in the background, you can read the rest of Rav Hirsch on your own. It's just fascinating what he says. And I think it's such a brilliant interpretation and an insight when you see it in the context of everything else that was happening. With everything going on in the background, there was a king who came from the Chashmonaim. We're just coming off the heels of Hanukkah. The Chashmonaim took over the Beis HaMikdash, and they were considered to be the great heroes. Unfortunately, the Ramban says, as much as we look up to them and we say they really saved us in the days of Hanukkah, and they really were the heroes, it wasn't entirely proper what they did, because they were not from the family of David HaMelech, and therefore they were not supposed to be the kings of the Jewish people. And yet they took the position of leadership of being the kings on their own. So much so that the Ramban writes, this is why after about 8 or 9 generations, I think he says, there was not a single member of the family of the Chashmonaim left alive. That was it. They were all gone, wiped out. And the Ramban explains the reason why is because it was a punishment for taking a position that they should not have taken. As much as they were the heroes of the Hanukkah story, it was a tragic ending. They should have realized, now that we did our job, we have to find someone from the family of David HaMelech, and he has to be the king, but they didn't. So one of those people who emanated from the family of the Chashmonaim was Yanai HaMelech. Anybody know anything about Yanai HaMelech? Yanai HaMelech is a fascinating story. Yanai HaMelech married his brother's wife. His brother passed away and left some children. His brother passed away and left no children. And the only one who was left to marry him, to marry her as a form of Yibum, was Yanai. So Yanai goes and marries Shlomzion HaMalka. To say that they had Shalom Bayis issues is an understatement. Shlomzion considered herself a part of the Prushim. She was a traditional Jew who was following the Talmidei Chachamim of the generation. Yanai considered himself a part of the Tzedukim.
Didn't she have a brother?
One second, we'll get to him, you're right. And that plays into the whole story here, very important point. So Yanai was going on about life. He was the king of the Jewish people, but he felt that the Tzedukim are the ones who have the right way of life. After all, it's a much easier lifestyle. Why should we be bound to anything? So Yanai was living that kind of life, and his wife, Shlomzion HaMalka, is this wonderful, pious woman married to this crazy, insane Russia. So, I don't understand exactly what was happening, but the Gemara says that things spiraled so far out of control that at one point, Yanai said, not only am I going to be the king, but I'm also going to appoint myself as the Kohen Gadol. Why should I let anyone else be in charge? I'm the king, and therefore I have a right to do everything. So he makes himself the Kohen Gadol. And the Chachamim were so angry at that. They said, it's bad enough that we have this crazy king. Now he's going to take over in the Beis HaMikdash. Also, he's going to make himself a Kohen Gadol. So one of the Tanoim went to speak with him, and he said, Yanai HaMelech, Rav Lecha Keser Malchus, is it not good enough that you have, look at number Zion, is it not good enough that you're ready the king? Hanach Keser Kuhuna Lezara Shel Aaron. What are you doing? You think you also have a right to be Aaron HaKohen? You have a right to also be the Kohen Gadol? Stick with your being the Melech. That's good enough. You have enough power. And don't allow yourself to take over the Beis HaMikdash. Obviously, that was a big burst to Yanai's ego. You're going to tell me I'm the king. I have a right to do what I want. So he was very upset. And as a result, the Gemara says that he went after all of the Chachamim of the generation, and he killed one by one by one. He killed every single one of the Talmidei Chachamim of the generation. All of this while his wife, Shlomzion HaMalka, was watching her crazy, insane husband murder every single noted Talmud Chacham of the generation, all because they slighted him, because they said, we will not accept you as the Kohen Gadol, you're a Russia, you don't know anything about how to run a Beis HaMikdash, you don't belong here, just be the king and stick to that. And he was angry, and as a result, he went and he murdered almost all of them. As you mentioned very correctly, Shlomtzion HaMalka happened to have a brother who was one of those Talmidei Chachamim. Anybody know who he was? Shimon Ben Shetach was the brother of Shlomtzion. So he had this awkward relationship. He has a sister who's married to a Rasha Marusha who has just murdered the entire religious leadership. And Shlomtzion says, look, I can't allow him to kill my brother. He's my brother. So she hides her brother Shimon Ben Shetach. And she gives him advice that he should hide wherever it may have been. And that's the way he saved his own life. So the Gemara tells us the story. So much so that the Gemara then says in Kiddushin Daf Tezvav, look in Amr Ches, Vayargu kol chachme Yisrael, every single Talmud Chacham of the Jewish community was murdered. Vahaya ha'olam mishtomim, the world was empty. The same terminology is used, anyone know when? When all of Rabbi Kiva's Talmidim died, the Gemara says in Maseches Yevamos, Vahaya ha'olam shamim. Doesn't mean there were no people left in the world, it means there were no Talmidei Chachamim. There were no leaders. Ad sheba Shimon ben Shetach, v'hichzir as ha'tara liyoshna. Shimon ben Shetach, who's the only survivor, why? Because of his sister hid him. He was the only one who was responsible after this great massacre. He once again brought the Jewish people back to where they should be. How does Shimon ben Shetach come out of hiding? So the Gemara has the most outrageous story. Unbelievable story. The Gemara says, Yanai just finished massacring every noted Talmud Chacham of the generation. They're all gone. Yanai throws a big party for all of his friends. And at the end of the party, they say, okay, we got a bench. Well, nobody knows how to bench. What should we do? Yanai says, let me go get a Talmud Chacham who knows how to bench to come and bench on our behalf. Oh, whoops. I just killed all of them. What am I going to do? It's like amazing. You were just involved in the greatest act of murder, and now you're worrying about how you're going to say the words of benching? It's insane. And the Gemara says, his wife says to him, you know, I might know somebody who can help you. So he says, what do you mean? I killed everybody. Who's left? So she says, I'll make a deal. If you promise me that you won't kill him, if I disclose his identity, I'll be happy to bring him here to bench. In walks Shimon ben Shetach. Lo and behold, her brother. And he says, I'm the last survivor. I'm here. And Yanai says to him, okay, maybe you can help us. Maybe you can bench on our behalf. Shimon ben Shetach says, excuse me, I didn't need anything. Is this a way to bench? Is this a way to treat a guest? Now it's amazing that Shimon ben Shetach talks back to him after he knows what just happened. After he knows that every single one of his friends, all of his contemporaries, all of his colleagues were killed. And Shimon ben Shetach speaks very rough words back to him. Till finally, in the end, he accepts Shimon ben Shetach once again. Yanai realizes he made a tremendous mistake. Can't take it back. Everyone's dead already. But he makes Shimon ben Shetach have a leadership position after that going forward. That's what happens. And because of that, the Gemara says here in Kiddushin, Shimon ben Shetach hichzir atara liyoshna. Shimon ben Shetach is solely responsible for bringing the Jewish people back to their feet. If not for him, we would have been gone. If not for him, everything would have been over. Shimon ben Shetach remembers that he had one friend who ran away out of Eretz Yisrael, and he had gone down, I think the Gemara says, to Rome. I don't remember if it was Rome or somewhere else. So Shimon ben Shetach sends him the following letter. Look at number Tes. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin Daf Kuf Zayin, he had this friend by the name of Yehoshua ben Prachia, who was also one of the leaders of the generation before everybody was killed. And now when he saw what was happening, he decided, I'm next. So he ran away. So Shimon ben Shetach is hidden, and his friend Yehoshua ben Prachia runs away out of the country. He doesn't want to be anywhere near this. So you have these two great people who are left. Shimon ben Shetach says, well, now Yanai put me in a position of leadership. So I have the ability to invite my friend Yehoshua and tell him, it's time to come back to Yerushalayim. Time to come back. Everything's safe now. Don't worry. I assure you everything will be okay. He sends a letter down to his friend and he tells him the following. Kishanas Shalom, when everything was worked out between Shimon ben Shetach and his brother-in-law Yanai, so Shalach lo Shimon ben Shetach, he sends a letter to his friend Yehoshua ben Prachya. And he tells him, I'm sorry, he was in Mitzrayim. He ran down to Egypt, not to Rome. And he says, Mini Yerushalayim Yer HaKodesh, Lechi Alexandria Shal Mitzrayim. The beauty of Yerushalayim is now found in Alexandria, in Mitzrayim, in Egypt. That's not where you belong. You belong back with us. You belong back here in Eretz Yisrael. And his friend's thinking, are you crazy? Why would I come back? And he says, no, Achosi Bali Shari Besochech Va'anochi Yosheva Shomema. Shimon ben Shetach sends him a letter in code, and he says, everything's safe now. It's time to come back. Yerushalayim is crying for you. Yerushalayim needs leaders again, and you're the only one left. It was me, and now it's you. Let's build back together. I want you to come back to Eretz Yisrael. Listen to this unbelievably tragic story. What happens when his friend Yehoshua ben Prachya receives the letter and says, okay, it's time to go back. Listen what happens next. And this is what we mention about Christianity. Tana Rabbanan. La'olam tei smol docha v'yamin mikarevus. Says the Gemara, we have a principle that you should always push away a little softer than the hand that is going to bring back. Says the Gemara, lo ke'elisha shadachva l'gechazi b'shtei adayim. Not a story for now. V'lo ki Yehoshua ben Prachya shadachva le'yeshu ha'notri b'shtei yadav. Yeshu ha'notri is Yeshu ha'notri. That's Yashka. That is the father of Christianity. Says the Gemara, he was the student of this great Yehoshua ben Prachya. What happened? What happened? And with this story we'll close. Says the Gemara, unbelievable. Just remind ourselves, Shimon ben Shetach sends a letter to his friend Yehoshua ben Prachya, time to come back to Eretz Yisrael, time to come back to Yerushalayim. Yehoshua ben Prachya receives a letter. Ma haya ha-maisa b'Yehoshua ben Prachya? What happened? Kishaharag Yanai ha-melech es ha-chachamim. When Yanai killed all of the Tamidei Chachamim, so Yehoshua ben Prachya and his student Yeshu at the time was a good Jew, went down to Egypt. They realized they were in trouble. They were going to be next. When everything worked out, Shimon ben Shetach sends him this letter, as we just mentioned, and he writes to him, Achosi, Bali, Shari, Besochech, Va'anochi, Yosheva, Shomema, Eretz Yisrael is empty, it's desolate, we need you back here, and everything's safe, it's time to return. Amaru bar Rabbi Yeshua. So Rabbi Yeshua is traveling back from Egypt. I would assume it took him a few days. V'nizdamno lo achsanya achas. He has to make a stop one night. He has to sleep over somewhere. So he asks, is anybody available to host us? I'm here together with my Talmud Yeshu, wonderful guy, nothing to worry about. Can you invite us into your home? Somebody takes them in. Asu lo ba, kavod meruba, they hear, oh, the great Yeshua ben Prachya is here. Of course you're welcome into our house. So they welcome him in. Amar, Yeshua says, kama yafa achsanyazu, look how gracious these hosts are. Look how nice they are to us. They invite us in, they give us a meal, they're taking care of us, give us a place to sleep. How nice. Amar lo, his Talmud Yeshu says, you know, they are very nice people. And after all, they are giving us a place to stay. And they did make us a nice meal. But, Rebbe, eineho trutos. Did you see that woman's eyes? Like, they're not so attractive. So Rebbe Shua turns back to me and says, excuse me? I'm praising this family for letting us in, and you're busy looking at the facial features of this woman and deciding whether or not she's attractive? What's wrong with you? Amar lo, Russia, bekacha ta'osek. This is what you're busy with now? We just went through a tragedy. The entire Jewish community was destroyed. Shimon ben Shetach finally gives us a note that we should come back to Eretz Yisrael, to Yerushalayim. We're finally on the way back, and that's all you can think of. All you can notice, all you can look at is whether her eyes are attractive to you. What's wrong with you? So he starts yelling at him. Bechacha ta'osek. And he takes out Dalad Meo Shofaros. The Gemara says he takes out 400 horns. Ve'acharimo. That was the custom. When they put someone in Chayram, they used to blow a shofar. So he takes out 400 shofars, he stands there blowing in his face, he says, Yeshu, get away from me, I don't want to have anything to do with you, you're out of your mind. If this is the way you think, and this is what you focus on, you're on your own. Balafanav kama pa'amin. Comes back to his Rebbe, he says, Rebbe, I'm sorry, I made an inappropriate comment, I shouldn't have said it. Maybe I shouldn't have been looking at this woman. Maybe I shouldn't have been focusing so closely on her eyes, on her beauty. Come on, all right, give me a break. Kiblani, he says, I'm ready to do tshuva. I'll apologize to her, I'll apologize to you. I'm sorry. I was always a faithful student of yours. I was always a good guy. So I made one mistake. I said something wrong. He doesn't want to hear it. Doesn't accept him. He says, get away from me. You're out of your mind. If this is the way you talk, if this is the way you act, if that's what you look like and that's what you focus on, I don't want to have any relationship with you. One day, the Gemara says, Hayikari Kriya Shema. This Rebbe, Rabbi Shulman Prachya, is saying Kriya Shema one day. Balafanav, and that day, Yeshu, his Talmud, who's begging him for weeks, just accept me back, I'll do tshuva, I'm sorry, I made a mistake, I said the wrong thing, okay, it's time to get over it. Finally, he realizes, you know, my student is really sincere. It's time to take him back. And he's ready to accept it. Problem is, that day, when Yeshu came to have the conversation with him, he's in the middle of davening. So what happens? What do you do if you're in the middle of Kriya Shema? Haralobiyadu, he says, hey, hold on a minute. Right? He's, I'm in the middle of Kriya Shema, what do you want me to do? So he sticks out a finger to his Talmud Yeshu, meaning, hold on a minute, I'll talk to you after I'm done. He thought, Shehu Dolcheosi, he thought that meant, get out of here. You know, there's a difference how you wave your hand. If you wave it like this, it means get away. If you wave it like this, it means hold on a minute. So Yeshu misunderstood. And he said, you know, how many times can I come back and try to get myself back to where I was? If he's not going to let me, and every time I've come, he's not willing to see that I'm sincere and I'm serious and I want to be a good person again, forget it. Halach behemid livne v'ishtachavila, says the Gemara. He goes outside from his Rebbe's home, builds a mizbeach for Avodah Zarah, and he starts bowing down to this, not mizbeach, a livna means a statue, and he starts bowing down to this Avodah Zarah. Once again, all because of a misunderstanding of his teacher. Amar lo, Yeshua realizes, look what I did. I meant to get him to a place till he's willing to be sincere. Finally, the day that he was sincere, unfortunately, I was in the middle of saying Kriya Shema, and he goes off, and this is what happens. So now he goes begging him, Yeshu, come back! You were my student all these years, and now I'm ready to accept you. And he says, no, kach mekublani mimcha, I'm sorry. One day in Shir, when I was in your class, you taught us, kalachoti umachti es harabim emaspikim biyado lasos tshuva. Somebody is achoti umachti es harabim, which is me, means I didn't just make a decision on my own that I'm going to serve Avodah Zarah. I didn't just go off on my own. I convinced others to come along with me. Yeshu HaNotzri says, you taught us that there's no opportunity for tshuva for someone like that. Because how are you going to get everyone back? How are you going to single-handedly convince everybody that you have thrown off to now come back and do tshuva properly? Yeshu says, Kishev vehisis vehidiach es Yisrael. According to the tradition of the Gemara, this is how Christianity started, which is unbelievable. All of this as an outgrowth from Tzadok and Baisus. Remember the beginning of the story. All of this created all of that, and this has been the Jewish problem for all eternity. That we have groups that splinter away and start doing things in their own way and don't follow what traditional Orthodox practice has always been. And look where it leads to. It leads to intermarriage in proportions that we've never seen before today in our generation. This is nothing new. This is all the same old story. It's the Tzadok and Baisa story. It's what led Yanai to murder and massacre all of the Talmidei Chachamim of the generation. And it's what ultimately led to Yeshu HaNotzri starting his alternative version of religion, which was Christianity as we know it today. All started from the Jews themselves. All because of one misunderstanding from this very simple Mishnah that we just read. They just didn't understand how to internalize the message of their teacher. And one amazing comment that I saw in the Svarno, with this we'll really close. The Svarno writes, commenting on a Mishnah later on in Perek Dalet and Perkei Avos, which at this rate we'll never get to. But the Mishnah says, so that's why I'll say it now. The Mishnah writes, Kol knesia shehi l'shem shamayim, sofa l'hiskayim. If you have a gathering of people that get together for a noble cause, for a good purpose, l'shem shamayim, sofa l'hiskayim, that will have an everlasting nature to it. That will be something that will be forever. However, the Mishnah contrasts that and says, kol knesia she'ena l'shem shamayim. Sofa, ein sofa lehiskayim. That will never be able to survive. The Sfarno writes in his commentary on Pirkei Avos that that is a reference to this as well. Can you imagine the Jews of this generation watching the Jewish community splinter away, splinter apart? I say to my father all the time, we talk every day, and I say to him, Daddy, look what's going on. How can this be? First of all the conservative and reform, look how far away they are. They don't even affiliate with the Orthodox any longer. They're so far away from where we want them to be. And not only that, then we look at the Orthodox community and we see groups are splintering away and they're going this way and everyone has their own picture of what they think Judaism should be. What's going to be? And my father always says, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's job to worry about it. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's job to make sure that Netzach Yisrael lo yishaker, that there will be a continuum of traditional Judaism. So yes, you have to do whatever you can to ensure that that will be the case. But in the end of the day, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's job. Can you imagine the Jews living through this turmoil, through this upheaval in the Bayis Sheni, watching Tzaddok and Baisis, who were two prominent Talmidei Chachamim of the generation, go off, start denying everything that we stand for in our Emunah and our Hashkafa, take over a Beis HaMikdash, put 300 Kohanim Gedolim into the position, one after the other, they're dying. We don't even have a strong foothold in the Beis HaMikdash itself. We have nothing. We have kings from Tzedukim who are murdering our own Talmidei Chachamim. Can you imagine what the Jewish community at the time was thinking? Can you imagine how depressing that was? And that's why the Mishnah in Perek Dalet writes, the Sfarno comes and assures the Jewish people, I understand that you're nervous. I understand your concern, what's going to be the future, and what's going to be, how are we allowing this to happen around us? And the answer is, Kol Knesia Shehi L'Shem Shamayim Sofa L'Hiskayim. You have nothing to worry about. As terrible as it looks, and as much as we're going to suffer along the way, and as many people as we might lose, and it's a tragedy, and it's awful, and we should do whatever we can to try and save that from happening, but in the end of the day, you can be assured, says the Mishnah, Kol Knesia She'ena L'Shem Shamayim, these Yeshu HaNotri, and these group of Sedukim and Baisusim and everything else, they're all gone. There's nothing left of them any longer. Kol Knesia She'ena L'Shem Shamayim, when their intent is not for the sake of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and for the sake of His honor, Ein Sofa L'Hiskayim, don't worry, there will be no future for these people. And you can be assured that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give a continuity to the traditional Orthodox Jewish people who are following what they are supposed to do with the Torah Shebichsav and the Torah Shebaalpeh. Look after the Holocaust. Has there ever been a comeback like we've had today? Look how much has been destroyed. And yes, it's true. The Jewish community as a whole has lost so many to intermarriage and to communities that just know nothing about what Judaism is all about. But look how much Klal Yisrael has grown in the last 70 years. Kol Knesia Shehi L'Shem Shamayim. Look how our communities have exploded. Think about my son's opening class in Darche, first grade, 8 parallel classes with 30 kids each. I mean, if I would have told my grandparents that there would be that many kids in one school, as many as we have in one grade, they wouldn't believe it. But this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises us. Ki lo yitosh Hashem amo. As dark a period of history as you think you're living through, and as scary as it is when you see that traditional practice is being compromised and is being threatened, you can always be assured, writes the Sfarno, Kol Knesia She'ena L'Shem Shamayim, Ein Sofa L'Hiskayim, it's just not going to happen. And you can be assured that a Knesia that is L'Shem Shamayim, every community that is built, Al Taras HaKodesh, with the right intention in mind, HaKodesh Baruch Hu promises, don't worry, that will have a future, and that is something you can always rely upon, and something you never have to be afraid of, that it will be destroyed. So this is the background.